Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at cenovus.com.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.
And while brushing my teeth tonight, I was like, did I pop a blood vessel in my eye? No, it was a dead gnat in my fucking eye. It had been there for like 8 hours.
You had a gnat in your eye for 8? How do you not know that? Like, did it feel like you had something in your eye?
It felt like my eyes, it felt like I was dealing with allergies okay. all day, which the pollen was so bad today, Greg. This was a New England special.
Right.
You know, when the fucking, like, it looks like it's snowing outside. And
I hate that so much.
It was brutal today.
I don't miss that at all. Like, we have pollen too, but it's largely just on the ground.
Right. So like, I took a Claritin today. I didn't think twice about it. I took a nap with that thing in my eye. I was brushing my teeth and I was like, what the hell is that?
I guess a gnat is so lightweight and like, you're not gonna feel it. Like, it's probably less to it than an eyelash.
Body shirt's going to work on a thing, because there was a nice coating of slime on that thing.
Of course.
Apparently my eye was like digesting it.
They say, don't we like eat 7 spiders a year in our sleep or some shit like that? Like,
I mean, it's an unprovable urban legend, but yeah.
But that has to come from somewhere. So and everybody thinks of like the big nasty spiders, but it's probably those little tiny ones that you can't even really, you know.
Right.
Deal with. So,
but yeah, so I had a gnat in my eye. I had a bat in my house yesterday. I'm just,
you had a bat in your house? Did you like put the signal and it showed up, or
no? I don't know how it got in the house.
Were you tracking? How'd you do this?
What's that?
Were you tracking bats? And then like, were you with the kid? Were you teaching him how to track bats?
No, nothing like that. We were just, the wife was in the living room yesterday, and all of a sudden she screamed.
Okay.
And I'm like, what? And I swear to God, Craig, I know it's been a long time since you've been by house, but the living room.
I can still see it.
Yeah, the fireplace.
Uh-huh.
With the brick.
Yeah.
It blended in so well with the brick, like the coloration. And it was just, it was sleeping. And so as we tried to like capture and get it out while it was asleep, it fucking woke up. And mm-hmm. then like, flew around our house. It took us like 20 minutes to like guide it into the garage. The story doesn't end there though.
Of course not. So why would it?
The garage door is shut and it has managed to put itself in its attempt to like hide from us. It has put itself between the garage door and the facade of the outside. So like,
okay.
The gap between the, yeah. and the wall. And I could see its wing. I know it's hiding. Because it's like, I just want to sleep and be left alone. So we leave it alone. We're like, tonight we'll open the garage door up. Hopefully it's moved since mm-hmm. then. And it'll fly out and life will move on. Because you can't really get in. So evening falls. We can't see the bat.
Right.
So Julie opens the garage door. And we leave it open for a couple of hours. And she got like super paranoid that like more creatures were going to get into the house.
Understandable fear at that point. Yeah.
And so she was like, I want to close the door. And I was like, don't know if it's out yet. Like, I just leave it open overnight. We'll not worry about it. Well, she didn't. She closed it. The bat was still on the garage door, Gray. So
right.
The garage door comes down. I leave for work this morning and I look on the garage door, and what is dangling asleep in the garage?
The bat.
On the garage door? The bat. But the poor thing is now trapped because it is pinched between the seal on the exterior of the door and the garage door itself.
Right.
And you can see that it has been frantically flapping its wings,
trying to get out
itself overnight. So I'm like, we gotta let the, like, I'm leaving for work. I text a picture of it to Julie. I'm like, we gotta figure this thing out. So she was impatient, went and tried to free it herself, couldn't get it free, opened the garage door a little bit. It did not get squished. But at this point, the thing was so tired and probably dehydrated and starving that it had pretty much lost a lot of its fight. We apparently, the wife managed to get him onto a dustpan and drop him off on a tree at our wooded area behind our house, giving the bat, affectionately named by my wife as Humphrey the Bat, a chance.
This is so amazing.
Godspeed, Humphrey.
This is, I'd be like, man, I wish I was recording, but you know, I am. So this is amazing. You've had fun over the past like 6 weeks since we last did a podcast. Like, you have had a blast. I don't think we podcast at all in the month of April because we didn't do the week before WrestleMania, or maybe we did, and then didn't do anything since WrestleMania. I've done one podcast with Rob and that's it. And then now here we are.
Yeah. You want to hear something funny?
Of course I do.
I can't do the show next week.
I can't either.
For a good reason. I think you'll appreciate this one. This is going to be hard for you to believe. Well, it probably won't be hard for you to believe.
Come on.
You know me and my wife.
It's me.
I didn't realize this, but we haven't had more than one night without the little O'Dowd in the house ever.
Like since birth.
Like that I can recall.
Right.
And the little O'Dowd is going on a 3-day, 2-night field trip.
Ooh.
Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday next week.
Okay.
And so the missus and I are going to go to the beach Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. We have a booked a room at a nice resort, and we're having a weekend without the child.
Right. During the week.
During the week.
Just call in. We'll just do one real quick on Tuesday night. It's fine.
No, I'm not going to.
I once missed my anniversary so we could interview Brian Kendrick.
Right. We're not doing that, though.
I wouldn't do that now either. We're talking about a long time ago. I wouldn't do that now either. The only reason I missed my anniversary to interview Brian Kendrick was because Tony Acero set it up, not knowing that it was my anniversary, and I didn't want to cancel on Brian Kendrick. Now I don't give two shits about canceling on Brian Kendrick and would immediately cancel on Brian Kendrick.
Conspiracy theories that you would get from talking to Brian Kendrick.
Which we got some of, but we could have gotten so much more.
Oh, like, we could have really gone into the rabbit hole. We talked mostly business, and then he was like, yeah, let's talk some other time when you want to talk conspiracy theory.
Right? And I'm way more interested in conspiracy theories now than I was back then. Like, that's one of the ways that I've grown as a human, is I am so much more interested in listening to things. Even if I don't believe in them, I listen to them. And it's a lot of fun, actually. It's since we last podcasted, I have actually become a regular listener and even gone back to listen to old episodes of the Joe Rogan Experience. I don't agree with half the stuff he says, but it's interesting. And his guests are like, they talk about some really interesting stuff, and like him or not, one of the things about him is that he is so open to other people's perspectives, and he's open to being wrong. Like, he's actually got a lot in common with us in that regard. There's some other things that I'm like, yeah, you're a little bit out there, brother, but who isn't? It's 2024. Almost everybody's an extremist at this point, no matter what they think. And he'll bring on people he doesn't agree with, and he doesn't cut them down. He doesn't tell them they're stupid. He actually asks them questions and tries to learn more about what they're talking about. So it's very interesting. And he just has people talking about some crazy stuff. And it's just, it's, you know, expands the old horizons, and that's what life's all about. So I've enjoyed that. I don't even know how we got on that topic, but that's Brian Kendrick, conspiracy theories. Yeah. And there's a lot. I mean, he's a big conspiracy theory person, so I think that's why he talks about them so much. And then he has a lot of stand-up comics that come on and they just shoot the shit, and that's a lot of fun to listen to as well. But I went back and listened to his podcast with The Rock. And it was from like November of last year or whatever, but he referenced it, and so I went back and listened to it. And it's real. I don't know that The Rock knew what he was doing when he went on Joe Rogan's podcast. 90% of the Joe Rogan podcast with The Rock is Joe Rogan talking and The Rock going, yeah, yeah, like that's it. And then The Rock might say something and then he's back to, yeah, just listening to Joe Rogan talk. Like, I wanted to hear more from The Rock, but
I kind of understand that feeling because sometimes I just listen to you. I just let you go, man.
And there are times when I just listen to you, so it's okay. It's all fair, dude.
How much wrestling did you actually watch that you weren't like involved in booking?
A decent amount. We'll talk about it. We're gonna play a song. We're gonna play a song, and I kind of assumed, given the time of year it is for you at work, and just how, you know, when we're not podcasting, it's easier for you to drift away from wrestling sometimes, especially because the age that your kid is, you have, you know, the wife, everything. I mean, I'm talking like since we last podcasted, I had a child graduate from high school 7 days after probably one of the top three most successful wrestling events I've ever put on. I don't even know how to measure that anymore because the way that we like pre-sell tickets and then have tickets at the door for that show and pre-sell for the next show, we were selling merch this time. Like, I don't even know how to, it all goes to one place. I mean, right. So
I will say this. I did watch Mania.
Good.
I caught the results of King and Queen of the Ring.
Right. Cause you're not going to watch that.
I prevented myself from getting into Twitter arguments with multiple AEW folks who, the cycle of the AEW pay-per-view is a glorious thing. And we can talk about that after we play the intro and stuff too. But
yeah,
AEW fans, you know what? I will say this. God bless you. God bless you and your hyperbole.
It's so funny. And we'll just talk about it now. The AEW fan base, it's the indie wrestling fan base. And I'll give you that comparison. Like there's like six local indies in Phoenix right now. It's absurd, but we are like the fifth or sixth largest market in the country. So it makes sense. And they're all somewhat being supported. Some of them don't draw, but a decent amount of them do. And when they put on an event, there are fans for every single, I would say for three or four of those indies, there are fans who are like, this was the greatest thing ever. And coming out of that event. And that's the AEW fan base. Like it's just the indies, you know, it's like if the indies was a balloon and you just blew that shit up as big as possible. That's what AEW is. Here's the problem, Patrick O'Dowd. And I'm just making up analogies on the spot. What happens when you just keep on blowing into a balloon? What's eventually going to happen?
The balloon will burst.
Exactly. We just came up with the most brilliant AEW analogy ever on the fly on this program. The balloon will, I might even name this podcast, The Balloon Will Burst. And people will be like, what the fuck does that mean? And then we'll find out what the fuck that means. I'm going to play some music. It's not even the usual show opening. I just picked a song that I'm pretty sure no one owns anymore so we can play it. And then we're just going to have some more fun talking.
About to explode like the Farino. Mean and green, so check my signal. It's the skinny individual who did you well. I kid you not, I think you stop if you got that scheme, cause my team bring the steam like a weather.
take my place in the sun. You can't deny the force.
All right, it's enough. It's enough of that song for now.
Yeah,
So that used to be part of our show opening, that song, actually, at one point. So
there's been a lot of things that have been part of our show opening.
Right?
Holy shit, NXT, dude.
I know. We're gonna talk about that. We will definitely talk about that.
19 seconds ago. Did you hear what else just happened?
Not 19 seconds ago, but don't tell
Ethan
me.
Ethan Page.
Just oh, really?
Ethan Page just came out and attacked Trick Williams.
No, really?
Sorry.
Holy shit. I would have found out before watching it tonight. I saw the Jordan Grace thing, and now the Ethan. I just saw that you sent me. But I had seen it earlier. I was coming out of the gym and saw that and was just like super excited, especially given the fact that I figured when Scott D'Amore was gone, so was the Jordan Grace possibilities. I was wrong, and again, right. as everybody knows, or you should know by now, I have no problem, and Patrick has no problem being wrong. That's what we do. Wow. Ethan, so they're going to just, but so there's so many things that I want to talk about.
Like, I might actually have to watch just because I'm curious.
So here's the thing. I've considered writing an article that is called, you don't even know about my writing for nodq.com. We haven't talked about that. Kind of using it to push some of our stuff, and they're cool with it. But I've been linking to different people's stuff, and they're fine with it. I've talked to them. But it's I've considered writing an article about what wrestling is most watched for you. Because NXT is most must watch for me. And the thing that I'm having a hard time with mentally is explaining why NXT is must watch for me. And I really almost, I'm not very good at introspection and reflection sometimes and things like that. I kind of want to sit down and figure out why NXT is must watch for me. Maybe it's because of the indie promoting thing, and that's the closest thing to an indie, a true indie, not a super indie like AEW, but
right.
Maybe that's why, that hunger that you see and everything. But like, so we're just going to go down the list of my NXT thoughts right now. Thought number one is something that I've been harping on forever. I tweeted about it a little while ago, and everybody thinks I'm stupid. This Vegas thing is, they're not just doing it for Battleground, in my opinion. We've talked about this. And even when Rob was on, I talked about it with him, and I don't know. He didn't dismiss it, but I don't think people, it's just so out of left field for so many people. It's just hard for him to talk about. Like, I think they're either going to do more in Vegas, especially with NXT going to the CW. They might not want to emanate from the same place every week anymore. I don't know.
Right.
Or what is WWE been doing? They just merged the live events divisions between the UFC and WWE. And every time they do this, it leads to somebody from WWE losing their job. Now, maybe people are losing jobs on the UFC side and we just don't know about it because we're not paying attention to that side of the reporting. I don't know. But then, so this is happening right here in front of everybody. But then when I suggest they might move NXT to Vegas, where the UFC has their own performance center called the UFC Performance Institute, everyone says I'm fucking crazy because they would never leave Orlando. Well, 4 years ago, you probably said they would have never gotten rid of their live events division. And yet here we are. It's now run by TKO. So to me, moving NXT to Vegas is just that, you know, equities of scale and elimination of duplication, in my opinion.
Yeah, we talk about this on Bandwagon Nerds all the time. Like, it's going on at Warner Brothers / PAX. Like, every time two companies merge and get bloated, one of them usually is going to make some decisions because you're getting rid of things like redundancies. You're making things work within your own company. And that's just the nature of the animal. And that's why it shouldn't be unrealistic or unsurprising that the possibility of NXT or, you know, other developmental sort of roles and responsibilities getting moved to the hub of TKO as opposed to keeping your gig in Orlando. Because frankly, it can be argued that NXT's kind of outgrown Orlando. in a lot of ways?
Maybe. I mean, maybe based on the shit we're seeing today, maybe.
Right.
It's just...
Well, yeah. It's crazy.
So here's my thing, though, and maybe they would help with this, maybe they wouldn't. It's a lot of people that would have to move and relocate from Orlando to Vegas. I think
not if the people you are wanting to take over already work in Vegas.
But I mean the wrestlers. The talent who all live in Orlando. A lot of WWE talent.
Who all moved to Orlando to do this, so they right. would never move to Vegas and do this. Like, that would be...
But, I mean, the would that be at the talent's cost, personal cost? Would WWE help pay for that? Like, what would that mean? Or would TKO, I should say, help pay for that? Like, what would that mean? Especially when NXT talents are not... the lowest WWE contract is $250,000. Main roster contract. And that's like... less than half the people on the main roster even have that. That's kind of like what you get when you get the bump up from NXT to the main roster. A lot of them are making $500,000 and more. So that's okay. You got to relocate, whatever. But NXT talent, a lot of them make like, what, 80 or something like that. Like, in this economy, saying you got to move and we're not going to help you pay for it, that's tough to do. One of the reasons there's so many cameos on NXT by main roster talent is because they live in Orlando from when they were in NXT. And that's why it's so easy for them to do that. So it would be a lot of people moving to Vegas. Now, some WWE wrestlers have moved, like Ricochet lives in Las Vegas with Samantha Irvin. Like, there is a decent amount that live in Vegas now. And so I could see it happen. Plus, I don't know if anybody's noticed this, but WWE has kind of become infatuated with Las Vegas. Like, between WrestleMania, Battleground. Nick Khan loves Las Vegas. Like, he was an usher at WrestleMania 9. Like, he's a Vegas person. You know, I think Triple H, like it's, you know, they're calling it the entertainment capital of the world. It really kind of fits WWE.
Right. I mean, WWE's gone through different home, quote unquote, home cities that they've been infatuated with at different times.
Yeah.
Over different eras. So this isn't particularly unfamiliar or unsurprising. So I don't know what the future is going to hold or what direction it's going to go. I just don't think that people should act surprised or indignant or act like anything is sacred.
Right.
When it comes to like there's nothing sacred in the WWE anymore.
Especially now, especially since they were purchased, especially since the Endeavor purchase and the TKO merger and Vince being gone, like, so much, it literally was one way for like 50 years. And then over the course of a year, so much has changed. Like it's a completely different organization. Even before that, the first time Vince stepped down, it was one thing. Then the TKO purchase and Vince was back and the order's wrong there. Vince came back, TKO purchase. Vince is chairman of the board. Vince is out because of a lawsuit that you can go either way on if you really look at the facts. I'm not really, who cares about, that's not really show fodder in my opinion. But it's so much has changed that you'll make a suggestion about WWE and someone will be like, dude, I haven't done that in 50 years. It's not the same company that it was
right.
50 years ago. Like,
just buckle up to that. You just got to buckle up to that and accept that. Like, that's what you asked for too, by the way. Kids, like,
yeah, be careful what you wish for, right?
Like, you sat there and you were like, the WWE's business model is trash, the WWE's booking is trash, the WWE's XYZ is trash. So then suddenly we're making all these changes, and you're like, well, they never did it that way before.
But see, that just comes from that the WWE is trash, and then here are my bullet points as to why. That's the same, you know, sit down and hate watch Raw, like you decide before you watch the show that you're gonna hate it.
I mean, just like, you know, you were talking about these, looking at, like, within the last week, we've gone SummerSlam to two nights.
Uh-huh.
Which
who said was that was going to happen?
Greg DeMarco said that was going to happen. We're getting way more international.
You know, I know. It's insane.
Like, it's all, like, the WWE is positioning. This is why I think it's laughable that any AEW stand would call themselves competition to the WWE.
Oh, God, no.
Because WWE is positioning itself in a global way across the world. And AEW is excited about Edge nearly killing himself and Mercedes Moné winning a match that she won because Willow Nightingale's friend, partner, whatever, turned on her. Like, and we're calling Mercedes the greatest of all time over there, which is
silly.
I want to punch somebody in the throat. She's not even the best wrestler on her roster, let alone the greatest of all time. That's right, I said it.
I agree with you.
But you know what? What do I know? Her, I don't think her character's that impressive. I don't. She's good. She's a very good wrestler. She was very, very good in the WWE. There's just this weird pedestal that's being formed on somebody. I think as a defiant backlash to criticism of how her run had been so far. Like, and I can't speak to how bad or not bad her promos were leading up to this. I've heard they were terrible, or just not of standard. I also know that her work in WWE and in Japan didn't tell me greatest of all time.
No.
She said, and here's the other thing. I think she should continue to promo herself as the greatest of all time. I love that that's what she says she is as a performer. I like that swagger. Fans, be a little more critical.
But if she said that, if the same person said the same line in the other company, they would be critical.
Oh, they would. Yeah, absolutely.
They would be critical.
I was like, that's literally the brass ring thing that we hear everybody else talk about. Like, go get it. And I want you to say that you're the greatest of all time. And then I want you to go out there and prove it. I'm not saying she can't be the greatest of all time either. Like, I don't see it.
Right.
I see her. First of all, because I hate greatest of all time, I think it's a stupid phrase to make. I think she could be amongst the most special talents of her generation.
Yes.
Is she there? She's up there. She's really, really good.
She's the fourth best horsewoman. There's only four.
Somebody on Twitter in the AEW said she was the greatest wrestler in North America, women's wrestler in North America during their Double or Nothing pay-per-view. And I can't see why you would type that with any level of a straight face. When again, not even the best women wrestler on your roster.
Probably not even as good as her opponent.
Right.
Based on what I have seen. And I said this in an article that I think comes out tomorrow. Mercedes Moné has proven that Mercedes Moné in AEW is nowhere near as good as Sasha Banks within the WWE machine. Like, and that you could say that for a lot of people. Look at Edge.
Right.
Edge has had a good run in AEW. That's fine as Adam Copeland, but pales in comparison to. In fact, the only person who I think is better off and has been a better character in AEW than in WWE is Jon Moxley. And that's solely because, now I don't like all the bleeding, I don't like all of that, but it does feel, it feels more authentic. Exactly.
Right.
And even if he were to come back to WWE, and I believe he will someday, maybe not though, given the amount of money he's making and he can just retire. If he were to come back to WWE, he would be Jon Moxley. I would assume just named Dean Ambrose, but Sean Spears came back as Sean Spears, not as Ty Dillinger, even though he wanted to enter the Royal Rumble at number 10 and they didn't do it.
Right.
Like, people do come back with their old names. So it's possible that they go with Jon Moxley if he comes back, but Dean Ambrose was a former WWE champ. He was a world champion in that company. So, you know, Drew McIntyre left, became Drew Galloway, came back as Drew McIntyre. So I guess if I had to place a wager, I'd say he comes back at Jon Moxley. So let's talk about NXT, though. You want to talk about NXT. We've already talked about, you know, everything going on in Vegas, this and that. But the actual card for Battleground has suddenly become somewhat insane. And there's a lot of layers to it. So we want to talk about the two big, first of all, say there's six matches, right? Normally there's five, but say there's six matches at Battleground. Three are women's matches already. because you got the six-way ladder match for the North American Women's Championship. You've got the NXT Underground match between Lola Vice, take a minute for Lola Vice, and Shayna Baszler. And then, of course, now you have the Women's Championship match between Roxanne Perez and Jordynne Grace, which is absurd. And so we've got already, and look, people were trying to point it out on about Dave Meltzer made a comment that, you know, there were only four women wrestling at Double or Nothing, you know, 5 years and you can only get four women on Double or Nothing. And Dave Meltzer, which I saw because someone took a screenshot, was like, you know, 50 years and WWE only has four women wrestling at King of the Ring and Queen of the Ring. Now, the difference is AEW had 10 matches at Double or Nothing. WWE had 5 matches at King and Queen of the Ring. 6 if you count the pre-show. And oh, by the way, that 6 match on the pre-show, a women's match. Not only that, there were 8 men performing at King and Queen of the Ring and 8 women performing at King and Queen of the Ring. I did the math. That's 50%. I don't think anybody needs help with that math. I did the math on Double or Nothing. I don't have the numbers in front of me, but I tweeted it. Yeah, I guess not. We didn't have that when we were in school. Well, maybe we did. I don't even know. But I did the math on AEW. I don't have the exact numbers, but I remember the percentage. It was 17% of the event was women. And that's counting Mariah May and Mother Wayne, who comes out with Christian Cage. Like, I'm counting everybody on the card because they're appearing.
Even further, how long was that pay-per-view?
4.5 hours, supposedly.
So 17% of a 4.5 hour show.
Right.
Had women involved, maybe not even necessarily, as you pointed out, working a match. Apples and pomegranates, kids.
When probably half of King and Queen of the Ring. Well, okay. Take out Randy Orton's entrance. I would say half of King and Queen of the Ring were women's match. Randy Orton literally had the longest entrance of his career. It had to be the longest entrance of his career.
Rightfully so.
At King and Queen.
You know what? Hell, let him take all fucking day every time he wrestled.
But here's the thing. Commentary, whether or not they were just covering or who knows, played it up as mind games with Gunther. And Gunther, to his credit, just stood there unfazed. I mean, that's why Gunther's so damn good. That match, by the way, was phenomenal. I know you don't watch it because it's a Saudi show, but if you ever made an exception, that's a reason to, because it's Randy Orton and it's Gunther. And I mean, the fans there, like, they don't know what's going on. So, or they do know what's going on, but they're just enjoying the show. Hell of a crowd too, by the way, like the way they were cheering. And go back and watch Backlash too. That was the crowd definitely helped it, but the performers also stepped it up because of the crowd. Backlash. Oh, you didn't list it when you were listing your things.
Yeah. So I watched AJ and Cody.
Yeah. Hell of a match. So was AJ and Logan Paul, by the way. Like, I'm sorry, Cody and Logan Paul. Like, yeah. Logan Paul is, we got to start having the world title conversation for Logan Paul at some point. Even if it's just
that's a win, not an if. Like, that's going.
It's gotta be. Even if it's just a transitional champion, it's gotta be.
Right.
So anyway, so now we've got Jordynne Grace challenging Roxanne Perez for the NXT Women's Championship at Battleground, and like, what do you do? Like if you're like, they gotta have something planned, because sure, Jordynne Grace could lose, and Roxanne Perez is a heel, so she could cheat to win, and probably will. But maybe they do something else, something more creative. Maybe they use another woman to get involved, and that's how shit goes down to protect Jordynne Grace. Jordynne Grace has like a Japan tour coming up in July, and so maybe, you know, does she win, like, and they do a rematch and Roxanne Perez wins it back and she becomes the first 3-time NXT Women's Champion. I don't know. They did a hell of a job selling it though, because last week on NXT, Ava's like, I talked to Pierce and I talked to Nick Aldis and they're both cool with it. And so you're like, okay, main roster person. There's rumors of Tegan Knox, whatever. And then I saw that and I was like, why the fuck would Adam Pierce and Nick Aldis care about Jordynne Grace coming to NXT? But that's just how they tell the story. That just they throw you off the scent.
And it's maybe not necessarily a free agent story, but it's, you know, like your other, not commissioners, sorry, general managers,
right?
Like you're not pulling a move. Like, that's, it's like you said, it's the story. You're not pulling a move to do something. And if the Royal Rumble was any indication, they're gonna take care of Jordynne Grace,
right? Yeah, they will. I mean, she's gonna look like $1 million. Roxanne Perez, for as young as she is an amazing performer. Like, the match is going to kill it.
You talked about the departure of Scott D'Amore. High five, cartwheels all around at TNA that your belt is now once again not just showing up in a premium live event, but showing up, even though it's NXT, say what you will about NXT, the TNA Women's World Championship.
Still going to be a top 10 program for tonight.
Right.
On cable.
On another promotions.
TNA rarely cracks a top 150. And Jordynne Grace is now on NXT.
Good for them.
Absolutely good for them. And she's going to beat their PLE. And not only that, but the social media push that she's getting from this.
Right. Not to mention, apparently Slammiversary tickets went on sale today.
See, that's just brilliant.
Oh, wait. No, hold on. No, this is just a press release. Sorry.
That's just brilliant, though. Like, even so, like, TNA is great about, like Drew McIntyre wins world title, and they're like, boom, classic Drew Galloway matches from TNA. Like,
oh, yeah, they know what they're doing.
Matt Hardy's a free agent and shows up. Matt Hardy's a bad example because he's there, but, like, you know, fucking Cody wins a world title, and they're like, Cody's best matches from, you know, even though he only had a few. Like, they're literally brilliant about how they do these things. Whereas Tony Khan's like, no one better watch the Royal Rumble. Like, it's just asinine, the things that go on and the things that happen. So then, like you said, like you told me, and you were so excited, Ethan Page shows up and attacks Trick Williams, and I saw the picture holding up the NXT championship to end the show. Like, he's obviously going to be the opponent. Well, I shouldn't say obviously, but most likely going to be the opponent at Battleground. They haven't really said. Noam Dar could be. They set him up, but that's what I assumed they were going to go with. But obviously Ethan Page. So, and everyone's like, Ethan Page is in NXT. Could be a one-off, you know, with Jordynne Grace being there. Who knows? But kind of makes sense for him to go there at this point. It's the one thing he hasn't done. But the thing that gets me is, like, that I started to talk about. If you are one of these people in NXT who's scratching and clawing, and I'm talking about the Noam Dars who've been wrestling for a decade and things like that, and seemingly on a course to a title shot, and then all of a sudden they swoop in with Ethan Page, or you're one of the women, the many talented women they have in NXT, and they, or even on the main roster who aren't getting enough TV time, and they swoop in with Jordynne Grace, it's like, I guess it's two ways, right? I guess you could be like, that sucks, or it could be like, I got to step my game up and make it so that they don't need to bring in an outsider for, you know, to take that spot that I think I should be.
That comes down to the athlete, though. That comes down to that person's ego and how they're going to, no pun intended, but that person's ego and how willing they're going to be to step up their game and continue to play, or are they going to sulk? Are they going to be, are they going to be CM Punk and bitch about part-timers back in the day? CM Punk back in the day, versus seeing this as an opportunity on the roster to make your mark, or to, you know, to take, you know, step up your game and move forward. Like, that's about the person. Some of it's about the person. Like, your attitude, you can control as a performer. You can control your attitude. You can control how you're going to respond and how you're going to work through that. Now, if creative just doesn't have anything for you or whatever, that sucks. You're going to get released and you can...
Right. Nothing you can do about it.
Go to AEW, work the indies, all the things that... You can be Matt Cardona. You could be... I don't know anybody,
but there's so few Matt Cardonas. Like,
well, and Matt Cardona is a bad example. Like, Matt Cardona found the thing and really knocked it out of the park. But you know how many I was on NXT, former NXT superstar,
right? Oh, yeah,
DeMarco on blah blah blah. Is very much a thing and a way to make some, you know, make a decent, not a decent living, but make a better living. In the world of professional wrestling, being on national television and then going to an indie show ups your value regardless. And then AEW may sign you as the next big thing, book you for a week, and then forget you, like Deonna Purrazzo.
Hey, she had a match on the pre-show. I think she won too. So
she did. I only say that because there was a very defensive tweet about her, like some statistical thing the guy that the dude used to be like, well, actually, she's been wrestling plenty based on this system that ranks like appearances and matches as if they're on a video game or something. Like, what are you talking about, man? Like, what are you, what straw are you grasping for here? Like
I'll do simple math.
And then she wasn't. Like, and nobody cares. Which sucks for her. Cause
flavor of the month. Flavor of the month. But hey, she got paid. And that's the thing about it. Like, she got paid. And so I can't complain. You know, I just can't complain when someone gets paid and they have money coming in. So.
No, I don't think that that's what I take issue with. I take issue with the idea of trying to tell yourself that a person is being made a bigger deal than what they really are. Like, I don't have a problem with Deonna Purrazzo. I have a problem with the person who's like, well, actually, Deonna Purrazzo is still a big deal because they're wrestling pre-shows for a 4.5-hour pay-per-view where 17% of the performers were women. Like,
now, when I made that calculation, the pre-show matches had not been announced yet. So,
well, I don't care. I'm running with it. We are running.
But in all fairness, I think the men's match that was at it had more performers and probably would have driven the average a little bit down. So, it's probably below 17% now.
Yeah. At the end of the day, that the point is don't pretend like both come like that AEW is somehow using their talent better. It's just not true.
Oh, obviously not. Like that's, you can't even responsibly say that. Like you just can't. But people will do it anyway. So I'm gonna play a commercial. We're gonna come right back. Once I find the commercial, I'm still on the IZW playlist here. There we go. Podcasting playlist commercial. No, wait. The fuck? There's the commercials.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
Hey folks, PC Tony here. Thanks to our new partnership with Angry Lemonade, you can save 10% on physical products and digital commissions using the promo code CHAIRSHOT. Head to angrylemonade.net to check out their amazing catalog of products and services. Use the promo code CHAIRSHOT to save 10%. That's angrylemonade.net.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Synovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at synovus.com. Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Synovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at synovus.com.
99% chance that code doesn't work. Let's be honest here. Like 99% chance that code doesn't work, but it's fun. So just make a note of where we are. How have we been recording a podcast for 41 minutes at this point? That's insane.
Well, because we haven't talked to each other about anything.
No, really. It's just life. Like life is crazy.
In a month and a half. Like we caught
it's
up
pretty nuts.
Caught up a little bit on lives. We're talking about, and we're all over the place with what we're talking about with wrestling today.
Yeah, it's fine. That's what wrestling is.
See, talking to AEW.
So let me shift gears then. Cause we can talk about the, you know, do all these newcomers and outsiders lose in NXT or whatever. We can talk about that later, by later, I mean another show. I want to talk for a minute about Becky Lynch, right? Becky Lynch contract is reportedly up on June 1st. She's like, to be continued. She put out a quote or a tweet or whatever, everything for Seth Rollins. I think she's wishing him a happy birthday, talking about how she's coming home. It's very intriguing to me because, number one, I'm pretty sure she was supposed to be off already. Like, I think she was supposed to be off after WrestleMania with him. She got called back because the Rhea Ripley injury. Again, had they just held a one-night tournament to put Liv Morgan over, it would have been fine. But they were also just doing one for King and Queen of the Ring, so I get it. But whatever. So, and I think maybe that soured things a little bit. Who knows? Maybe she comes back. She probably will. Maybe she doesn't. But I thought about the possibility of Becky Lynch going to AEW, right? Rebecca Knox is what she wrestled at on the indies. That's probably what she would be, unless she was came in as Rebecca Quinn, you know, her real name. Who knows? But I caught myself in this interesting experiment that I wanted to bring up. Because in my brain, I was like, could Becky Lynch be like, I was like, Becky Lynch could probably be the person that moves the needle for AEW. And then I was like, well, wait a minute. Sasha Banks couldn't do it. Edge couldn't do it. And he came off of a huge WrestleMania match a few months before. Daniel Bryan Danielson couldn't do it. And he main evented WrestleMania with Edge and Sasha Banks on that same WrestleMania 37 had Edge, Daniel Bryan Danielson, and Sasha Banks all in main event matches. And they all now wrestle for AEW. And they haven't moved the needle. And or even like up the credibility of the company or anything. And those were like the three biggest names outside of John Moxley. And John Moxley to me is different because he was there at the beginning. He appeared at the first ever Double or Nothing pay-per-view and came out. And I think he did give them credibility. Even more so looking back now than Chris Jericho did. Like, I do think they talk about Daniel Bryan Danielson being the best signing AEW ever made. It's John Moxley, in my opinion. It's John Moxley. And so I was like, so what makes me think Becky Lynch could be any different? You know, it's really, I don't think she could. I think I was wrong in what I was thinking.
I don't know that there is a talent that hops over that does it. And not because of who the talent is.
Maybe John Cena or Brock Lesnar. I don't know.
I mean, yeah. So this comes down to it's not the people. It's the product. Like, the people aren't the problem. There's no question that the roster for AEW, in my opinion, has the talent to be a strong, competitive alternative to the WWE if the product itself was better. And I'm not saying the product itself is bad. It's an old argument that we have been making for quite a long time. It's a very, every time I watch this program, when I watch, you know, when I am like, okay, today I'm going to give Dynamite, I'm going to give Rampage, I'm going to give it a shot. Maybe there's something reportedly going to happen that sounds intriguing. I'm going to check it out. Every time I try to watch one of these shows, Greg, what happens?
You can't even finish the episode.
And that's why the AEW product is the problem and not the talent. Because you can't, like, I am a wrestling fan. I watch WOW Women of Wrestling.
That's impressive.
And that is not a good wrestling show, folks. Like, it is an entertaining wrestling show. I love it. There's a certain level of this is so bad it's good.
Right.
To it, like,
and I know some of those people. Like, that's the funny part.
We've interviewed some of those people. We've had some of those people on this program, and that's fine. And it is great for what it is. I don't know what AEW is. I don't know what it wants to be. I don't know what the stories are that they're really trying to tell and how they connect to what's going to happen next. Like, you had eight dudes beat the shit out of each other. For what purpose? Were they fighting for the soul of AEW?
Like, one of them was called Team AEW, which, what was even on the line in that match?
That's the point. This is me. It felt like they tried to recreate the Horsemen versus the NWO War Games
match. But that at least had stakes, even though they were stupid stakes. You knew the NWO was going to win. They were stakes,
right? But that's the part that's missing. And this is what I think is funny is I keep seeing AEW defenders come at me or you as a detractor when we're like, what's the story? What's the point? And then they show, they think a story's a heel turn. They think a story is a surprise, like it's a swerve, bro. That's, they don't, like, they have one good story. And even then, I don't know that that story's kept its way, because
right.
What is Adam Copeland doing now? Who's he fighting now?
Now, he was supposed to gain two members of the House of Truth to become part of the House of the Brood, but now he's got a broken leg and it's probably going to be out for the rest of the year. So
I saw that. Gangrel, like Gangrel shows up.
But that's because that's what he really wanted to do back when he did the SummerSlam entrance. But that's how they. But that's the thing. Like, they let wrestlers dictate this stuff, and it just doesn't work.
The dude is in his 50s.
He pops the hardcore crowd. And that's their audience, and that's all. But that's the thing. So I wrote this article today, and I talked about this, and that's where the Becky Lynch comparison came up. Because I do believe AEW has the ability to gain credibility and move the needle and get there. They won't, because they really need to put all of their energy behind Swerve Strickland and behind MJF, who just returned.
Yeah,
Swerve, people are going to be like, well, Swerve's an ex-WWE guy. Yes, but he wasn't like a main eventer. He wasn't, I don't even know if he wrestled on a main roster PLE. He wrestled on NXT once, but.
Yeah, I barely knew Swerve Strickland was over there.
Yeah, because he was just calling Swerve Scott, and he was part of, you know, Hit Row.
Right.
But, so I don't view him as an ex-WWE guy. I think it's silly to hold that over, especially when he was released at a time when lots of people were being released. And it is what it is. I think he's done great things in AEW, and I'm glad he's their world champion. MJF is the best homegrown talent they have, right? Him and then Hangman Page. Like that's it. And then I feel like you could call Swerve that, even though he's not. So whatever. So we take Swerve out of the equation. It's MJF. So I would be putting all of my resources, all of my marketing, everything I can behind MJF and Swerve Strickland, to where I would, right now, today, I would say, if I'm Tony Khan, obviously I'm not, because I'm sitting in my bedroom doing a podcast with you and not a billionaire, or the son of a billionaire. I would decide the main event of next year's Double or Nothing is MJF versus Swerve Strickland. And I would put and I would say Swerve's not going to lose the title until then, even if he loses then. And I would build that match up. So I would build those two up separately. Maybe they have a match on TV, because that would pop a rating and it's not as conclusive. And then it just makes people want to see it more when it finally happens at Double or Nothing next year. It's part of the story. But I would strap the rocket to both those guys. And when we got to Double or Nothing next year, that would be probably the biggest match in AEW's history at that point. And if they actually do it right, they could get back to having 11,000 people in the crowd in Vegas for Double or Nothing like they did 5 years ago. But I didn't say the Young Bucks.
What was the crowd?
It was like 5,000 or 6,000, I think, is what it ended up being.
Like the footage.
Yeah. Because they set it up just like WWE used to do back in the day, right? Like the hard camera side, whatever. And 5,000 or 6,000 is fine, but it's not the 11,000 that they had the first time they ever did it. And that was without TV. But that was the novelty, the newness. Like it's apples and pomegranates, like you said earlier. But I didn't say the Young Bucks. I didn't say Okada. I didn't say Jack Perry. I didn't say Chris Jericho. I didn't say all these things that are undoubtedly going to get in the way between now and then, because it's AEW and that's what they do. And because they don't want the same things that I want. Tony Khan doesn't want the same things that I want. Although if he did what I said, he would get what he wants, which is to actually be considered equal to or better than WWE. Like he would be closer to that in terms of what he was doing. But he doesn't have that vision, and he's never going to hire me, because one search in my Twitter feed and he'll realize why. But it's they have it. But it's like keeping a Corvette in the garage and never driving it. Like they're just never going to do it. So, that's kind of where it's at for me. But that's what I think. I think MJF and Swerve should be the ones they build around, not all these outside talents, in my opinion.
Yeah, I completely agree with you, because it's clear. It's also just clear that the alternative is not working right now.
No, and again, that's not even bringing into account my number one gripe, which is the presentation, which is right. is what it is. Although Raw this week didn't have the video boards for the ring aprons. And like, I get not having it in Saudi Arabia, some of that stuff, but Raw had the normal ring. Oh, they had a cage match. So never mind.
Right.
That's why they had a cage match. When you have a cage match, you can't do the video boards or the boards on the post. I take it all back now. I forgot they had a cage match, even though I watched it last night and today. So,
JK, my bad.
My bad, everybody. Bad on Greg. But that's kind of my thinking and what I think. And that's the crazy thing. Like, remember we used to talk about TNA all the time. We used to always talk about potential, a P word, potential. And I'm getting to that point with AEW because I do like people they have on the roster, but they make it so hard. Yes, but they use it so poorly. And it's just, it's so difficult. And the more that things happen, like Ethan Page going to NXT and you know, Cody Rhodes is the WWE champion after, you know, being one of the founders of AEW, like, the more it just makes it easier for people to jump back and forth and back and forth. Mark Henry's going to end up working for WWE again now that his AEW deal is up. Like, right. If I'm him, I'd have a sit-down interview with somebody in Mark Henry every week on Raw. It's a three-hour show, right? You know, one of those backstage pre-taped interviews with Mark Henry. You can also release the whole thing on social media. Like, he's good at that. They did it occasionally in AEW and it was effective. It's just
like the Jim Ross intimate interview segments.
Yeah. But now it'd be legit because they're presenting it more as a sport now. WWE is. It's crazy. One thing I realized watching Raw, like, because of the injuries, because post WrestleMania, Raw lost Cody Rhodes. Raw has basically lost Drew McIntyre. Mostly, Raw has lost CM Punk. You know, they lost some people to the draft. Like, Raw feels like a rebuilding. It's like a rebuilding year for Raw right now for me. Like, they're pushing Bronson Reed and Chad Gable's moving up the card. And, you know, literally your top babyface is Jey Uso, who was on the show this week, and Sami Zayn. Like, it's just very much. It's just like Damian Priest is your world heavyweight champion. Like, that's just weird to
me.
And then I realized this too. We talked about WrestleMania and you watch WrestleMania. The four biggest stars of WrestleMania, Seth Rollins, Cody Rhodes, Roman Reigns, and The Rock. Three aren't there right now. That's very difficult for a company to take on. Like, three aren't there. And Cody got moved to SmackDown. So Raw lost Cody. And I think it would have been better if Cody was on Raw and Damian Priest was on SmackDown. Like, SmackDown is like, SmackDown feels like must watch television. Everything feels huge, but they got Randy Orton. They got Kevin Owens. They got LA Knight. They got so many people. And the people that got moved to Raw are like more of the up and coming people, like Karrion Kross, who's that gimmick stinks, but he still got moved to Raw. And you've got Damian Priest, like, probably not going to be remembered as this amazing world champion. Let's just be honest. Like,
right.
Feels like an Intercontinental or United States champion. Now, Gunther is on the up, and maybe he'll become this huge star. But then do you have Drew McIntyre beat Damian Priest just to lose to Gunther? That seems counterproductive for Drew McIntyre. Now, I love when Drew McIntyre has shit to complain about, so it could be good. But it's like, Raw's just in this weird place because of the injuries and everything. Like, they probably should have moved the Bloodline saga to Raw in all truth, yeah. Like, or LA Knight to Raw, you know, or Randy Orton to Raw. Like I feel like Raw could have benefited from one of those pieces because SmackDown is so loaded with veteran talent. They did move the LWO over, but it's like, okay, you moved over the LWO. But the LWO is like, you know, on the back end of that, you know, Ray's career anyway. And then you got all the other role players. So it's just an interesting spot that Raw is in for me versus SmackDown. And then of course NXT, and then it's all going to change when Raw goes to Netflix and SmackDown comes to USA. Like, it's just this crazy scenario and crazy year for all these things that are happening in wrestling. But just, I mean, do you think Becky Lynch would end up in AEW?
I I want to say no. Like, I want to say no because I can't envision it.
Right. I couldn't envision Edge doing it either. I'll be perfectly honest with you. I was shocked when he showed up.
Huh. So I want to say no. Just give it. I also would be. I mean, how much does she want to keep wrestling? How much is she more interested in being a right. mom than a wrestler? Like,
I think it seems like she might. But AEW would give her that flexibility. I mean, Will Ospreay gets to live in another country, as does Kazuchika Okada. So she could take months off at a time and still get paid by Tony Khan. So it could work. I can't say 0% chance. I can't.
No.
I would probably say 10% chance. But I can't say zero. History has just told me that that's not a thing anymore. And that's fine. That's kind of like the one... plus that AEW has is they can get talent. Even though a lot of the recent free agents have stayed with WWE, they could still get talent to come into the company. And they don't need talent. That's the crazy thing. Like, they don't need, you know, Becky Lynch. And like I said, I my brain says she would move the needle. My heart says she would move the needle. But my brain says, look at history. I don't think she would. So... I don't know. I just don't know where we're at with that and everything. But the next few weeks or months and even are just interesting, you know, with SummerSlam coming up and we still got like Money in the Bank. We've still got so much. And we were talking about, you know, we talked about the PLEs like you brought up. Money in the Bank's in Canada, like literally besides WrestleMania and the Royal Rumble, there have been no premium live events in the United States
right.
this year. Last year we had a few like that late summer ones that they did, you know, Extreme Rules and I think that was this year. And there was another one, Fastlane, which took place in Indy. Like they did some of those. That was that whole Seth Rollins, Shinsuke Nakamura, couple matches they had on, you know, PLE. But it's just very interesting to see, and they might do that again. But this is a thing I wanted to bring up with you and talk about. Again, it's one of those crazy things that I say that, because something's been some way for 30 years, nobody can believe and listen to. For years, I wanted to say that Money in the Bank was a big four pay-per-view, and now the big four was the big five. Like, because Money in the Bank just felt that big and whatever. Now I have done a complete 180, and I actually think the big four is dead. Because I don't think Survivor Series is... You're putting up two. I think it's three. I think it's Royal Rumble. It's the ones that are in stadiums. It's Royal Rumble, WrestleMania, and SummerSlam. And then I think you've got this second tier that are Money in the Bank and Survivor Series. And then you kind of have everything else. But I really think it's a big three at this point. Now, no one's going to want to accept that because Survivor Series started in 1991 or whatever. And so how dare we? You know, it's been 33 years, whatever. But look, I mean... War Games basically saved. So Vince was going to get rid of Survivor Series at one point. Like, that's how you know, tough Survivor Series has it. But I really do think it's a big three.
It really kind of is. You think about how the kind of the wrestling calendar year starts. Depending on how you look at it, like I would actually argue that the wrestling calendar year, like most people would want me to say that it's Royal Rumble because quote road to WrestleMania. I really think that the wrestling calendar year starts with WrestleMania and heads towards its finale by the time we get to the Royal Rumble.
I agree. I think you could make that argument very well.
It's the watchmen. Now, unfortunately, what kind of shoots a hole in my argument is when immediately after these big stories end or, you know, kind of create the new beginning for the following year, there's always this. Have you noticed that there's always this like rough plateau that say a new champion has coming out of WrestleMania, whether it be Cody, whether it be Damian Priest, whether it be, well, it's kind of hard with Roman being as dominant as he had been for the couple of years before.
He also wasn't a new champion.
Right. But the now what factor of a new champion leads to then this sort of like, to me, that's why it always feels like that's the start of the wrestling calendar year, because it's kind of getting yourself in gear, and you're always building to the next, and the culmination
right
/ start is WrestleMania. So
to me, I think WrestleMania to WrestleMania makes the most sense. I really right. do. Cause Royal Rumble is the road to WrestleMania starts at the Royal Rumble, but the road to WrestleMania is like the landing of the plane, really. And that's, you know, the Raw after Mania is like the plane taking off, and even Raw after Mania, it's kind of like deboarding the plane, really, if you think about it. And that time between WrestleMania and Backlash is just kind of like, it's a transitional champion is what it is. Really. Right. It's a transitional champion of the wrestling calendar, but no, it really does. It has to go WrestleMania to WrestleMania. The more I think about it, the more you're 100% correct. Like, it just
right.
makes the most sense. But you're right. Like coming out of this year's WrestleMania, they put both champions in really tough positions. And because Damian Priest, like, he's kind of like, he's sort of feuding with Drew McIntyre, had the match with Jey Uso. His biggest feud is like against his own faction right now, kind of. Like, that's his most intriguing part of his story, is what's going on with, it's like their own bloodline saga. Cody has nobody. Like, the Logan Paul thing, they probably threw together because the Saudi Arabia people probably wanted that. I guess Logan Paul is like their new person they want on every event, and that makes sense. But it's like, what do you do? Like I'm interested to watch SmackDown this weekend, because we know that Gunther is the challenger for SummerSlam for the Raw side. So who's I would not be shocked if LA Knight turned heel on SmackDown. Because, like, what do you do for Cody? Like, Bobby Lashley's a face now. You don't want him to feud with Solo Sikoa. Like, I just want him away from the bloodline, personally. It just doesn't make sense. I also, and I wrote an article about this, to me, SummerSlam main event should be Roman Reigns versus Cody Rhodes 3. Like, what do you think when you hear that? Roman versus Cody 3 at SummerSlam.
I like it.
I know I just dropped it on you out of nowhere, but
right. Well, I mean, you consider everything you just laid out as to what's next for Cody, and we're May 28th as we record this.
Right.
But like, it's also ready made.
It is, because they're 1-1, and that's what a lot of people don't realize. Yes, Cody finally won at WrestleMania, but he lost at 39. And if you want to say, oh, well, he only lost at 39 because Solo Sikoa interfered or whatever, but like, did you see the interference at WrestleMania 40? I mean, what you do, in my opinion, is you do Roman versus Cody at WrestleMania, and it's completely clean. You let Roman put Cody over clean, and then you have the bloodline attack Roman because he lost. And there's consequences if you listen to what Solo Sikoa says on SmackDown. And so you keep the bloodline out of that. Like, you don't even, this is how I would book it. Again, booking by Greg. You know, Greg's a promoter. Roman would not appear on television before SummerSlam. We would announce the match. We would show videos, maybe have someone go to his home, Mark Henry, and interview him and do all of this stuff. And then his first actual appearance is at SummerSlam. So there's no bloodline. Maybe Heyman has a conversation with Cody and agrees. Like, bloodline's not even on the SummerSlam card. Like, just completely and totally no bloodline, which just fuels them being pissed off and want to attack Roman even more. And it's Roman who asks for it, right? Roman wants to do that. And then Cody gets to beat Roman clean, which he has not done. And then we're off to the races with Roman and his bloodline storyline. Because I don't think it's The Rock and Cody at SummerSlam. I don't. Supposedly The Rock's not really going to be available till early next year anyway. I think Rock and Cody happens at WrestleMania. But right. to me, I think you do.
It makes the most sense.
You do that rematch. And they did it with Roman and Lesnar, right? They wrestled at WrestleMania 38 and then again at that SummerSlam. But that's because, you know, Randy Orton got hurt. Supposedly. Who knows? But that's kind of my thinking and where I would go with that. So let's play this. And then I got a completely different thing to talk about at the end that hopefully won't be too depressing in the world of wrestling.
3 minutes, and you better make it good.
We got 3 minutes and we're out of here. The clock is ticking and we're in the clear. We got 3 minutes and we're out of here. We got 3 minutes and we're out.
So I did something today. It happened today, actually. And it was the most depressing thing ever. There's just random things that happen in the world that you think about, people you think about, stuff that pops up in your head. Do you remember a wrestling website which really got our starts in the world of message boards called Online Onslaught?
Yes.
Rick Skaya, who I've actually interviewed back when I first ever did a website and podcasting on my own. I wish I had that stuff now, and I have none of it. But occasionally I'll be like, what's the Rick up to? Like, what's going on with the Rick? Like, I knew he had health issues. He knew what he had or whatever. So today I looked up the Rick, and I found his Twitter account. And the pinned tweet on his Twitter account is his family announcing his passing last July. And I'm like, fuck.
Didn't we know that?
I did not know that. Maybe you did, and I didn't. I did not know. I knew he had cancer. I knew he was fighting it. I knew he had things going on. I did not know he passed away. And I was just like, fuck. Like, he and I would DM on occasion and talk about wrestling stuff like that. And I interviewed him in 2010, 14 years ago. And it's just crazy because, like, if I were ever to amass, like, just an all-star opinion roster of people to write about wrestling, say I had like 10 slots, he'd be one of them. I'd be one of them myself, but he'd be one of them. And I just love, like, he was a big part of my introduction into the world of, you know, he was never a podcaster, but writing about wrestling, all of that, like, if he had a website still, I probably would have written for it. Like, that's where we were at. I think I tried to at one point, but he was just on to other things. Cause I know he also worked in the world of insurance. Like, he had a lot going on. I did not know he passed away last July until today, when I went to 00Rick on Twitter and saw the pinned tweet that his family put out there. And even the obituary that I read, like, there was a paragraph, a very short paragraph dedicated to his influence in the world of online wrestling. Like, it was very well done. And I was just like, that sucks. Cause then it brought me back to when Larry Zonka passed away back in 2020. And I'm just like,
yeah, that's who I was thinking.
Man. That's probably who you were thinking was Larry. And I found out about that when Steve Cook texted me and was like, Larry's dead. Like, and he wasn't doing it to be, you know, short or anything. It was just he was in shock. Cause he was very close with Larry and you know, very close. Like, they were good friends, not just podcasters. Like, they were like you and I, Steve and Larry were, except they met through writing about wrestling and everything. So that is, I was just like, holy fuck. Like, it was just, I remember, like, you know, reading his website, and then he and the guy from Mikasa Wrestling, Mike Mikasa, started WrestleManiacs, which CBS bought from them and became WrestleLion. He told me the whole story about how, you know, CBS was paying them in payments. And at the end, because Mike was a lawyer and couldn't really do anything, Mike did the deal. Mike was sending Rick all the money because he was doing all the work. Like, just all those things. And then he lost the Online Onslaught website because he didn't have access to the email address that it was registered. Like, all this crazy shit that went on. And that was the message board where so many of us got started on message boarding. And I was just like, holy shit. Like, I had no idea that he passed away, and it fucking sucks. And it's just, you know, we should have had this conversation back last July, but here we are. And it's just terrible. But I had to bring it up because, like, I asked a couple other people and they didn't know either, because he had largely disappeared. Like, even before his passing in July of 2023, he hadn't tweeted anything since 2022. And at that point he was mostly focusing on, you know, Discord chats and that sort of thing. So, but that is just, I mean, a hell of a brain, just a great, you know, sarcastic, witty style. And I'm talking about it now as if it's new news, and it's not. And it didn't get reported. Like, when Larry Zonka passed away, it got reported by other wrestling websites.
Yeah, I remember. Yeah, it went around.
And Rick did not. And Larry was bigger than Rick by choosing, because Rick had a job. And, like, right, doing this was Larry's job, and it was not Rick's job. Should have been. He was that good. But it just sucks. And those things hit you, and I'm just like, fuck. Like, that's just, you know, that sucks. But what can you say? What can you do? So I don't even have a purpose behind it or whatever, but it's just, that's how fleeting the world is sometimes, and how crazy our existence can be. So I'm sorry I didn't know that sooner. If you're listening and you knew that and you think I'm stupid, you're probably right. If you're listening and you didn't know that, it's okay to admit it. And it's okay to miss these people as well. So it's like people say, you know, I don't take pictures. Like I'm all about taking pictures and everything. And people are like, the next show I'm taking a picture with you. And then we don't, cause I'm too busy. But, you know, all those things are just, you know, I think as we get older, we realize the importance of some of these things. So that's, that drives that importance home as well. So trying not to be down and depressive about something that stinks, but it did happen. It is what it is. So I think we're good. We went all over the place, like you said. So maybe we can record. It's funny because you're going out of town. My wife is also out of town Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. And so I was trying to see what I was going to do on Tuesday. Maybe we record something over the weekend. Like I feel bad about immediately turning around and missing again, but who knows? Who knows?
I'm okay with it.
I know you are, but like, I feel bad about, we literally went like 6 weeks and then I told Tony, I was like, no, we're back now. We don't have to miss again for a little bit. And here we go. So we'll see.
Yeah, man.
We'll see what happens, but we hope you've enjoyed this program. It is what we do best. Talking about wrestling.
Special limited edition version of the Greg DeMarco.
God, it seems like it and it sucks, but no, like at the end of June, I have to go to fly to Nebraska for orientation. My son and I are flying to Nebraska for orientation. And then of course the end of August is when move-in happens and you know how that process is. So
I do.
That process is compounded because it's 20 hours away. So that's fun, but yeah. Hope you enjoyed listening at Wrestling Realist, WrestlingRealist for Patrick O'Dowd, at Greg DeMarco 44 for me, at Chairshot Media for all things, the website, allthingschairshot.com. Always use your head.
Thechairshot.com. Always use your head.
And do that. Do just that. Until next time, always use your head.
Under pressure, about to explode like the phone ring. No, mean and green, so check my signal. It's the skinny individual who did you well. I kid you not, I think you stopped if you got that scheme. Cause my team bring the steam like I wonder from my oasis. And the race is right, now it's time to take my place in the sun. You can't deny the force.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Synovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at synovus.com.